Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey West. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we are talking about a very famous film franchise. That's the Mission Impossible franchise. And Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 is in theaters with Tom Cruise, of course, in the lead role as Ethan Hunt. So we will be discussing the Mission Impossible franchise today. We come at this from a little bit different backgrounds. I have seen all the Mission Impossible movies. Katie has watched the first one and then watched this one. So,
yes.
But you did watch the original, which I think gets you kind of set up in the... Not really. It's not really a world, but like you just get to know the character a little bit. So
can I just say I'm experiencing so many regrets right now because I still hate Tom Cruise, which I'm sure I'll mention at least five other times during this podcast. But I am surprised with my love of James Bond, like near obsession with James Bond, that I never got into these movies. And I like really, really like spy movies like this. And the first one, I do want to say, I watched the first one and Arjun watched it with me. And he really likes these movies, which I didn't know. That was new information for me. And we're watching it and people are dying left and right. Like you meet, and I feel like the movie's now like however many years old, so I don't think this is new information. But people are dying left and right. You meet them and 5 minutes later, killed. And I, every single person, he was shocked. He was like, how did you not know that these people died? Like, this is, people knew this happened. And I was like, I don't know. So I don't know how I stayed away so much from this franchise. But now I liked this movie enough, spoiler alert, that I think I want to watch all of them.
Yeah, and I would say these are not maybe as spy-based as James Bond because, like, that's a little more... less bombastic action sequences and like he uses more gadgets and things than Ethan Hunt does. So those are a little more, and those are classed up a little bit because like he's wearing suits and going to fancy parties and everything in all of them. But yeah, these are kind of similar, I would say, to James Bond. So for sure.
Yeah.
So we will talk about Mission Impossible today, but first we do have some news items. The first big news item is that in addition to the writers being on strike, the actors are now on strike as well. SAG-AFTRA has gone on strike since our last episode was recorded. So that means they can't film any movies right now. The actors cannot go on television shows or do podcasts or interviews to promote their movies. They can't post on social media about their movies. So they've kind of gone just radio silent while they work out this deal to try and get this strike resolved. And mainly what the actors want, from what it sounds like, from what I've been able to research, is they want better health insurance coverage, which is fair. A lot of them say that they don't make enough. You have to make $26,000, I found out, a year to qualify for health insurance through SAG-AFTRA. And a lot of actors that are like supporting or background don't make that amount of money to qualify for insurance. So they want that fixed. And they also want more residuals as well, which is what you get paid when your show airs after it's already aired the first time. So like when reruns of Friends air on TV, the actors for that show still get residuals for that, or any other show or movies. Like if a movie airs on TNT or something, actors get residuals. But with streaming, the residuals for like Netflix shows and Hulu shows and everything are very, very low. And obviously they don't like consider that rewatching it, even if somebody watches it multiple times,
right?
Or they don't really have a good system for that. So it seems like, from what I can understand, those are the two main things that they want to kind of work out, is better insurance and then getting paid for stuff that they do that's more streaming based.
Yes. And to add some extra context too, because I've seen some people, haters on social media, are like, oh, look at these spoiled rich actors. To give you perspective, first of all, I do fully support this strike as an actor and a person that loves this industry. I'm devastated because I miss TV and I miss people shamelessly plugging these movies that I want to go see. But in the fashion, of course, the fashion and the award shows, this is going to affect so much and it already has. But these people, most of them, like Jared said, I saw that 26,000 too. Most of these people are not spoiled rich actors. It's not like Brad Pitt started the strike. These are people that are hardworking, that are not at the height of their fame yet, that are just trying to live paycheck to paycheck in one of the most expensive cities in the nation. And to give people more perspective, we have our own set of problems in this day and age because they're having to contend with AI problems. So AI is basically able to write material based on someone's voice and how they write. So that's a new problem. And then another thing they're having to deal with, I knew this was going to fly out of my brain. The second I was like, there's going to be two things. Oh, yes. Okay. So a great example is Friends, the TV show Friends. So you would have back in the day, 20 to 24 episodes a season of a show. And now you're talking Netflix, HBO Max, mm-hmm. all of these different places are doing like 6, 8, 10 episodes maybe. So you're not even getting nearly the amount of pay that you would have gotten because there's not as many episodes anymore. And things are not in syndication like they were when like Friends and Seinfeld and everything was going on. So people should really think about that. And before you cast the first stone, maybe do your research and understand why people are upset. I did see, Jared, what I was devastated about today. I mean, I'm already devastated because I don't have Colbert and Seth Meyers every night. It makes me so sad. That's another reason I've been flying through TV shows at night is because like when I'm getting ready for bed, I used to watch them and now I just turn on like Netflix shows and things. But SVU has already said it's not going to be on the fall schedule. And I was like, no, that means no organized crime or Law and Order SVU. Like, what am I going to do? Thank God for reality TV, which will keep going.
I think you're the youngest person that watches Law & Order SVU and Law & Order Organized Crime.
I love it so much.
Who is this woman in Ohio watching this not in our core demographic?
But I'm so glad. Thank God they had already filmed And Just Like That this season.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God they had already done like Barbie and Oppenheimer and Dune Part 2. Like, I don't even know what would have happened to me if some of these things... I mean, I'm sounding really dramatic. And also, it's good that I like reality TV that's on Bravo and stuff like that, because that's the show's going to keep going on there.
Yeah, those are safe. Reality shows are safe. Game shows right. are safe. But and then in terms of delays and stuff, yeah, if you're looking at it for this year, everything's probably going to come out as it's scheduled. Now, some of the actors may not be able to go on, you know, shows. And right now there's no late night shows either because of the writer's strike. So you may not see them doing interviews and stuff. So they might not have as much press. But it seems like everything that's coming out this year will be fine. It's really when you get into next year, especially later next year, stuff that was like currently filming now or mm-hmm. was in the process of being written, maybe when the writer's strike happened, things like that, those will probably get delayed. Like the next, you know, this is relevant because we're talking about Mission Impossible. Part two of this two-parter is supposed to come out next year. I mean, if the actor Yikes. Strike goes on long enough, it probably won't, or it'll come out later. It won't come out in the summer. It might come out in the fall or winter of next year. So depending on how that
shakes out. Oh, no. What about Spider-Man, the Spider-Verse one?
Yeah, Spider-Verse will probably also get delayed. So, yeah.
And then what was the other thing? Well, I worry for our Oscar party, obviously.
Yeah. Yep.
And the Emmys. What else was I thinking? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it'll come to me. Oh, no. I know what it was. That this is the first time, this hasn't happened in over 60 years, that the SAG-AFTRA members have also
mm-hmm.
Gone on strike with the writers. But I am in support of it. But just, you know, Steven and Seth, I miss you so much. I think about you every single day.
Hopefully they can get a deal worked out soon that's fair and equitable and, you know, makes the writers and the actors happy and they're able to get the things that they need. So,
yes.
We do have some other news items. We had some breakups this week.
So sad.
Ariana Grande is now single once again after splitting from Dalton Gomez.
Hold the phone, Jared.
Okay.
Breaking news today. So her divorce news broke on like, I don't know, Monday. Today's Thursday, the 20th. And they think she is dating this guy named Ethan, who is in the Wicked movie that she is currently filming in England right now. He has red hair. Listen, you know what I can say about Ariana? She does not have a type. Like, if you look at the people she's dated, no one looks or acts or has any kind of similar background at all. So interesting. But she and Dalton broke up after 2 years. I can't say I was surprised. And then Joe Manganiello, I think that's how you say it, and Sofia Vergara broke up after 7 years. So they truly, it was the 7-year itch, you mm-hmm. guys. It does yeah. happen to some people.
Yeah, this Ethan dude, I would say, is dating way out of his league, probably.
I don't know what's going on. I mean, he's probably mega talented if he's been cast in Wicked.
Yeah, and it looks like he's done some other Broadway musical type stuff. Yeah. So I'm sure he's, like you said, he's very talented. He was in the SpongeBob SquarePants musical, and he got a Tony nomination for that. So
I think
he
played
SpongeBob. So, you know, good for him.
Okay.
So. Yeah, but Ariana already was somebody else. And then, yes, yep. Sofia Vergara and Joe Manganiello, divorced. Lindsay mm-hmm. Lohan had a baby, so congratulations to her.
A little boy. I was going to put his name, but I can't pronounce it, so I left it out. It starts with an L. I'm sure it's a lovely name, but I couldn't pronounce it, so...
And then Britney Spears also has written a memoir that will be out in October. Now, people, ever since Britney got out of her conservatorship, people yes. are still saying that she sometimes has exhibited signs of maybe acting a little strange or odd mm-hmm. or things that she posts on social media. So mm-hmm. it'll be interesting to read this memoir and see, you know, if she was able to say everything that she wanted to say or if there's things held back or what the case is with this book. So.
I don't care what's in the book. I don't care if a ghostwriter wrote it. I don't care. I will read this. I can't wait. I'm
coming
so
out just in time for the holidays too. I mean, yes. smart with the release date. So,
oh, Brittany, I'm so excited.
That's all of our news items. So we'll move on to our recommendations now. I don't really have any recommendations this week. I don't think I've just been kind of cruising through TV and I was on vacation, so I didn't really watch or read a ton of stuff during that time. So, but you know, we got a lot of movies coming out soon. TV shows, it's a good time to catch up on old ones that you haven't watched yes. in a while, or things that maybe you've never started that you've wanted to watch. So, but yeah, recommendations pretty light for me this week.
Well, that's exactly what I've been doing is catching up on shows. I finished Shameless. One of my favorite, but I finished it, so now I feel like I can cross that off my list. Another one I oddly enough didn't finish was Suits. I loved okay. Suits. I watched Suits from day one. Before Megan was a big deal, like I watched that show. I loved that show. But for some reason, I do think this might have been when I moved to Georgia. I could be wrong. I think something significant happened in my life, and I just didn't have access to USA, like because it was on the USA Network. So I didn't have cable. But anyway, I missed the last two seasons, I want to say. So I need to see how it ends. I think I even read how it ends, but I want to watch it. So I'm rewatching the last three seasons, kind of gearing up for those two that I missed. But it is now on Peacock and it's on Netflix. So, and I checked, okay. I was like, that's so weird that they both have them, but they do. So if you want to watch Suits, you never got a chance. I really like it. And someone made fun of me this week for liking Suits, but I liked it. I really did like it from day one. And Meghan Markle's pretty. So, and then speaking of Meghan Markle, the two books I have to recommend, this week, I finally read Spare. I have had Spare. I pre-ordered Spare by Prince Harry before it came out. And it's just been sitting on my shelf. And I thought, I just have to read it. But it's kind of a behemoth of a book. It's like 400 pages, a little over. But it was much better than I expected, I have to say.
Okay. I had heard some things that it wasn't great, so.
Oh, I thought it was really good. But I think the credit okay. should go to the ghostwriter, which his last name is Mo Ringer. I can't remember his full name. But it was well written. Harry spills a lot of tea. Like if you're wanting the dirt, you're gonna get dirt. It's very heavy on his military time that he served, which I think okay. for some people would be super interesting. But by the end of the military section, I was like militaried out. But it was fascinating. I will say I am much more inclined to believe Harry and what he is saying and accept it as truth. But overall, I am just bothered by the public airing of their dirty laundry. Like, just crapping on Charles. I don't like Charles. I don't, you know, William. I think William's kind of in the wrong here. But I don't like that they're just, like, back and forth in the public talking crap to each other. So, that's not my favorite.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, that, like, he wrote a book because like he obviously has enough money being in the royal family
yeah.
that like he didn't need to make money, but obviously the book made a lot of money because it was written, you know, it was his biography or whatever.
Yeah.
So and, yeah, but they do bash each other a ton. Like,
they do.
In public.
I don't think Harry's lying. Like there was a lot that I thought, yeah, that adds up, or things he said about Diana's death or things he said about why they moved to the United States and Canada first. It makes a lot of sense. Like, I don't really doubt what he's saying. It's just really sad. And then I forget what else I was going to say about it, but it was good. It's worth a read, especially if you're like me and you're just intrigued by the royals in any capacity, whether you think they should be in power or not. It's a good read. Then also, complete opposite end of the spectrum, I reread Matilda. I had not read Matilda since I was like maybe fourth grade, third grade. I don't know. But when the Wonka trailer came out last week, I was like, dang, I should reread some Roald Dahl. So I checked out Charlie and the Chocolate Factory or whatever the official title is. I checked out Matilda and I checked out the BFG from my local library. So I'm going to try to read all three of them rapid fire. I read Matilda yesterday in one day, but I forgot how beautifully written those books are, like his style of writing Roald Dahl. He cared so much about kids. Like, he was devoted to helping children's charities for like sick, terminally ill children his whole life. He was a fascinating person. But Matilda, I definitely forgot about the like complete abuse suffered at the hands of Trenchbull and then also her parents. It's like legit abuse, which isn't funny. I'm just saying, like, it's weird that this is like supposed to be a lighthearted children's story.
And yeah, then, I will say, like, he wrote books for kids, but he didn't like dumb it down at all. Like,
he didn't.
All his stories are kind of serious or deal with, like you said, like some pretty substantial themes that you maybe don't see in like kids' books.
Which I respect, and I can see how that set him very much apart from other children's authors, especially in that time. And then I also forgot Miss Honey's dad was killed, allegedly, by Trenchbull. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so much darker than I remember it being as like a 9-year-old. And then lastly, nothing to do with children's books, Real Housewives of New York, new season has started, but it's a full new cast, Jared. These ladies, I think they have like picked some of the best. I don't know what kind of drama is gonna like unfold, but the fashion's on point. The first episode was great. So if anybody loves Real Housewives and you are nervous about them revamping New York, I think they've done a good job.
Good to know. Also, we did not mention, but there's a new season of Too Hot to Handle out on Netflix, but I've not watched it yet. Yeah, I saw saw a trailer for it. So,
well, I'm saying it on this recording. Netflix finally caught me. I was using my brother's. this is actually intriguing, though. I hope Sean hears this. While they were in Spain, Netflix didn't catch it. Because I think because they were in another country and like the VPN, I don't know how all that works. The minute they came back on U.S. soil, it was like, we know you're using someone else's account and you need to pay for your own. So I just haven't gotten around to paying for my own. But I'm going to, because I have to watch those shows.
Watch your shows, yeah.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, we got hit with that as well. So
yeah. Well, guys, if you don't want to get hit with that, just move to another country.
That's the best way to avoid it. Yeah,
you can avoid it. I haven't even told Sean. I hope he listens to this episode and that's how he finds out.
So we'll talk about Mission Impossible now. Dead Reckoning Part 1, released on July 12th of 2023, rated PG-13 for violence, action, some language, and suggestive material. It's 2 hours and 43 minutes. Rotten Tomatoes, IMDb. IMDb is at 8.1 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes critics 96%, audience 94%. So everybody liking this movie. Box office has done well, $91 million domestically, $259 million worldwide so far. And of course, the synopsis for this one, Ethan Hunt and his IMF team must track down a dangerous weapon before it falls into the wrong hands. That's kind of the same plot line as every Mission Impossible movie, follows that tracking down of an item. And you said in the chat just now, you have a funny story about Indiana Jones, which that movie series is also about tracking down items or things. So
I didn't mean
that's my transition.
I was just so worried that I needed to get this out because Mandy, you know, Mandy, our friend of the pod, who has guest starred on the show. And also we have called her
she's a research assistant now. Yeah.
Yep. So and sorry, everyone, because I'm so pumped to talk about Mission Impossible, but we covered Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny on our last episode. And one of my mega dislikes about the film was when Mads Mikkelsen, they come through the clouds and they're on a plane and he goes, look, Sicily, 1939. And I was like, this is madness. Like, how would he know where he's at, what time period it is? This is ludicrous. And I thought it was so funny. Mandy, when she always listens to the episodes right when they come out. And when she heard the episode when it came out, I knew she was listening that day because she texted me right away and she sent, I'm trying to find the picture. I might even put it on Instagram, but she sent the picture to me of, it's from the Golden Girls. And it's, who's the mom? Why can't I? That's not Rose, because Rose is Betty White. Sophia. Sophia, in one episode, I don't even know when this was, there's a meme that says, picture it, Sicily, 1912. And I laughed so hard. I like scared people in my office at work. Because, and they didn't know what was going on. So she said, listening to the podcast now and all I can think is this, and sent me that picture of Sophia saying that. So I'm probably going to put that meme on social media, but I just need everyone to know how funny that was. And Mandy, thank you for like the biggest laugh of my entire week.
There's no shouting out of locations in this movie, which could be a positive or a negative for you, depending on, you know, how much you enjoyed that scene from Indiana Jones. But
true,
like we said on the episode, it is very random that they jumped through time and then he's there for 5 seconds and knows exactly what year and where he is.
Yep.
That would probably not happen. So the Mission Impossible movie is directed by Christopher McQuarrie. He's done the last couple of these. He's a writer, director, and producer. He wrote the screenplay for The Usual Suspects, which you probably have heard of, which was directed by his childhood friend, Bryan Singer. And in 1996, he won a Best Screenplay Oscar for The Usual Suspects. He's also been nominated for Best Picture and Best Adapted Screenplay for Top Gun Maverick. He did not direct that movie. Joseph Kosinski did, but he helped produce and write that film. And he is also writing the upcoming Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 2, which he will also direct. I think at this point, him and Tom Cruise work pretty well together. They kind of know what they want to do with these types of movies. The last four of these really have been solid films. So I think they know what they're doing. Brad Bird directed one, who also directed The Incredibles. He did the fourth one, and then McQuarrie did 5, 6, and now the seventh one, obviously. So, but yeah, they seem to know what they're doing, and they seem to work well together, and they kind of have a good pairing on these movies.
Yes. Totally agree.
So we will take a quick break here, and then we will come back and talk about the cast and our likes and dislikes for Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. And we're back here on the Silver Screen Podcast talking about Mission Impossible. Of course, the man that has been in all of these from the very beginning is Tom Cruise, playing the role of Ethan Hunt.
Yes, Tom Cruise. I've already mentioned how I feel. But he is best known for Top Gun, Top Gun Maverick, Jerry Maguire, The Last Samurai, A Few Good Men, and the Mission Impossible franchise. He's been nominated for 4 Oscars for Top Gun Maverick, Best Supporting Actor in Magnolia, and Best Actor in Jerry Maguire and Born on the 4th of July. Next up, you can see him in Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 2 and Live, Die, Repeat, and Repeat.
So that is a sequel to, I don't know if you saw it, came out a few years ago, that movie with him and Emily Blunt. It was called, forget the title of it, but they basically are like going through time or whatever. Edge of Tomorrow, that's what it was called. So,
oh yeah, that's right, with Emily Blunt.
Yeah, yep. So this is, I think, supposed to be a sequel to that movie. So,
okay, that sounds right. That sounds right.
Yeah. So, well, that'll be interesting.
Next, we have Hayley Atwell. Listen, I really debated a crush alert, but I feel at this point it sounds like I have a problem. So I just was like, no, let's not add a crush alert because I sound like I can't control myself. Hayley Atwell plays Grace. Interesting fact, she has dual citizenship in the United Kingdom and the United States. She is best known for The Duchess, Ant-Man, Captain America the First Avenger, and Captain America Winter Soldier. Next up, you can hear her in Tomb Raider, where she will lend her voice, and also Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 2.
Very nice.
Thank you. And lastly, we have another person I'm quite fond of, Rebecca Ferguson. She plays Ilsa Faust. What a great character name. She is originally from Sweden, and she seems to be in just about every movie right now. I don't know if I never noticed her before or if right now is she's just getting in every single movie. But you can see her in The Greatest Showman, Mission Impossible Fallout, Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, and Dune. Next up, you can see her in Dune Part 2, Silo, and Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 2, which we might have more to say about that later.
I have also heard Silo is a TV show on Apple TV Plus. I've heard from multiple people that it's pretty good. I don't know if the whole season is out yet, but it's like science fiction. But I've had a few people recommend it to me. So I've been meaning to watch it. I just haven't done that yet. But I've heard she's good in it.
She is. It's like everything that has a touch of sci-fi, she's in that.
Yeah, that's her genre, I think.
Yeah,
she just likes really the light sci-fi, and with Dune, the heavy sci-fi stuff.
Yes. And then there was a huge cast of people that made up this film. I kind of picked the three that I think were highlighted the most, but the supporting cast was excellent. I will try not to butcher their names. I knew all of these people from other shows, though, or movies. But this movie is also starring Simon Pegg, Ving Rhames, Esai Morales, Pom Klementieff, but Vanessa Kirby, Shea Whigham, and Henry Cerny.
So we'll talk about what we liked with Mission Impossible now. First thing, obviously, is the locations are really cool for these movies. Every movie they go, and they've built on this since the first one. They've gone to multiple locations now in a lot of these movies. This one is no exception. This one, they are in Italy a lot. And that is a very cool setting. Lots of mountains, bridges, of course. You've seen it in the trailer. Tom Cruise does his big motorcycle jump off like a mountain thing. But the scenery in these movies is really good, and this one's no exception. They kind of go all over the place. Like, they're in the desert at one point in this movie, at the beginning of it, and then they go to Italy. So they kind of bounce. They're at an airport in Dubai. Is that where they are?
Yes.
I think. So they kind of bounce around a lot, but the scenery and locations are cool.
Yes. And to me, that is definitely an appealing element that reminds me a lot of James Bond. I like any kind of movie that where they go to like some exotic locations, just beautiful places, and where there's a lot of them. And you get to see a lot of the scenery and stuff like that. So I really enjoyed the places that they picked. I also liked the juxtaposition between the places. Like, it was cool to see a desert for a while. And then when they're in Italy, a lot of it was like Venice. So there's a lot of water and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then they go and they're in the mountains. I do forget if they were in, it wasn't the Alps, because they said
it was somewhere else. Yeah.
But you get the picture. It was beautiful, but I liked how different all the locations were as well. And just like even modes of transportation, they were in like a tiny little Fiat. Was it a Fiat? I think it was.
Yeah.
And then on motorcycles, they're on trains, they're on planes, helicopters. I think that's really neat too, and really lends itself to the whole like spy-ish type film.
So the next like is that Hayley Atwell is the new addition, to this franchise for this movie. She has not been in any of these previously, but does a really nice job. Obviously an actress that is kind of making a name for herself after being in some Marvel movies and some superhero type films. This is obviously more of like a action thriller type movie.
Yeah.
But she is really good, and she's kind of the co-lead in this one along with Tom Cruise.
Yes, I'd seen her in the Captain America movies. So I'd seen her before, but she never really stuck out. I was really impressed with her. I liked her character. I felt like she wasn't so cocky. It was annoying, but I felt like she was a good player beside Ethan Hunt's character. And I think she is just stunning. I don't really know what to, I can't put my finger on it. I did look her dad in her IMDb profile. He has, Native American or American Indian heritage, which once I read that, I was like, that absolutely makes sense, 'cause her bone structure is just gorgeous. But she's beautiful. I really liked her. And then a twofold like that goes with that. I really liked that there was no central romance story. I don't know if that's typical, since I haven't seen the other ones except for the first one, but I like that there was enough, I guess, sparks or tension between her and Ethan Hunt that you're kind of led to believe they're attracted to each other, but there was no scene where they went and slept together. There was no scene where they like made out or anything. And I liked that, because that makes me more invested in their story. And I also think they didn't need it to keep it interesting.
I will tell you in 2 and then also 3, uh-huh. that's a big, there are relationships in that movie for sure and romance.
Yes.
But I feel like the last couple, they've gotten away from that a little bit, which I think has worked maybe a little bit better because you don't have to devote time to it. So, and as Tom Cruise gets older, it kind of doesn't make sense to pair him with, you know, a 27-year-old woman his like romantic partner. So I think as he's gotten older, they've moved away from that a little bit. And obviously, like, Top Gun Maverick had a romantic relationship, but it was like very like realistic of what a relationship of two older people would probably like be.
Right. So, like single parents or people that are around the same age that have a history together. That all makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So another like that I had is obviously the action sequences are really good in these movies. I think my two favorite from this one, I don't know about you, but I really liked the car chase scene in the Fiat. I thought we get car chases a ton in movies, but this one was a little different in terms of, this is a little bit of a spoiler, but the Fiat doesn't have the doors on it. They're also handcuffed together, Tom Cruise and Haley Atwell. She doesn't really know how to drive the car that well. I thought all of those were just kind of interesting things for a chase sequence, because normally it's like there's a chase sequence and the person just drives the car really great and you know that they're not going to have any problems. So also I will say in this movie it looked like they actually did have a car go down the steps of wherever they were, whereas in Indiana Jones it was clearly CGI'd and very obviously CGI'd. So
yes, like I was there another scene? Did you say there were two?
Oh yeah, the other action sequence that I liked was the like alley fight when they're in that really small alley and they're kind of
Pom.
Like and then Rebecca Ferguson is on the bridge like sword fighting basically. So
the bridge the bridge scene was good.
So I think those were my two favorites. I mean, the other ones were good. The airport one was cool. The end of the movie one was good, although I have some dislikes about that, but I think the car chase and that alleyway were my two favorites.
You might be able to convince me to have things I didn't like. I kind of was just so impressed with a lot of this, probably because it was so fresh to me that I just thought, oh wow, that was really good. The scenes I really liked, also the car scene and the bridge scene. Those were two top ones for me. I really liked the train situation going over the bridge. I liked it because although that can be very, I mean, most of it, 95% of it, I was like, this would never happen. You wouldn't survive this. This is stupid. But I thought the camera work was so interesting. I also thought like it left me physically exhausted. Like I felt like I had just lived through a fight or flight situation. And I was impressed with like how creative they were. So everybody, like these train cars are falling off a cliff. And it's like a train car would break off and fall to its death. But they would have made it and leapt on to the next one. But then that one would start to fall. So then they would have to figure out a way to get onto the next train car. And I thought, again, I thought this would never happen. But most of the things in this movie, I thought this would never happen and or you would never survive it. But that I kind of was just willing to let that go, because when I look at movies like Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny or any Fast and the Furious movie, I just roll my eyes and think it's so ridiculous. And when I looked at this, I was like, okay, some of the stuff is either plausible or it's done well enough that I can suspend disbelief for this.
So the next like, and this is also a spoiler, so if you haven't seen Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, come back.
You.
But the supporting characters in these movies are really good. Simon Pegg is great. Ving Rhames is great. I loved the conversation that Simon Pegg, Ving Rhames, and Tom Cruise are having with Haley Atwell before like the climax of the movie, where they're like, you have a choice to make and it's all a choice that we made, and you can decide whether you want to basically become a part of, you know, IMF or if you want to go your own way. But I thought that scene was really impactful. Some really good acting by all three of them. And it came at a point in the movie where it seemed natural that her character had been through some things at this point, and she did have to make a decision if she wanted to continue or not. And then Tom Cruise also being like, you know, I will never basically let you get hurt or let you be put in danger. Like I always, you know, protect my team. So I thought that was a good scene there. But then also, obviously, the big thing that happens in this movie, again, spoiler alert, is that Rebecca Ferguson, who has been in the last couple of these, dies in this one. At least we think she's dead. I guess she could come back in the next one. But we think she's dead at this point. And that was a really impactful character death, a supporting character that they've built up over the course of a couple of movies. And then somebody that Tom Cruise is obviously, like, as his character, as Ethan, is really emotionally invested with. Mm-hmm. And she unfortunately, you know, bites the bullet in this one with a knife to the chest.
Yeah. And that made me really sad. And I wanted to highlight this because as someone who hasn't seen the last few movies, I didn't even have that time to develop that relationship with her. But I think even in just this movie, you could tell that she and Ethan Hunt's character were like such good friends and had such a non-romantic, friendly, familial kind of relationship that I was devastated when she died. And I really thought, although I know in a lot of these movies, that's like a common thing for someone you love to be killed or whatever, I really didn't think they were going to kill her. I thought that she was going to win that fight. Because it seemed, too, like there were multiple villains in this movie. So I just thought, like, well, maybe she'll kill this guy and then Palm will be, like, the main. I couldn't figure out who was going to be, like, the victorious villain or the person they had to kill in the end. But that death was deeply upsetting. I thought they did a really good job with that. And that fight scene before was fantastic.
Also, the I think it's that scene, like, right before Tom Cruise gets to her. He's running, as he does, very fast. But he runs yes. past, like, a road or a sidewalk that's like just lit with candles, but the way they like do the shot is like he yeah. turns the corner but the camera doesn't cut, it just kind of goes around the corner with him. I thought yeah. that was very cool, like a very cinematic
yes
cool scene.
Again too.
Just very simple, just light a bunch of candles and put them next to the sidewalk or whatever, but it really looked very cool on screen.
Yeah,
so
yep.
Another, like I had, speaking of supporting characters, I thought Vanessa Kirby was very good in this one. She's been in a couple as well, but in this one, she has to play herself, and then she also has to play Haley Atwell's character a little bit too, when there's like two of them. So I thought she acted that very well and did a very nice job in her role, which is a little bit bigger role than she's had in some of the previous movies.
Yeah, I think Vanessa Kirby is good in everything, but she... I liked her character. I especially like, too, that she's just this, like, cold... What did they call her? The White Widow?
I think so, yeah.
What a cool name. And also, things happen to her... Okay, oh, I did think of a dislike. Thanks for bringing this up, because it really bothered me. So I'll just hold that until later. But I liked Vanessa Kirby as well. And she was one of the people that I was talking about where I was like, I can't tell who the true villain is in this, because it seems like there's multiple people who are... out to get Ethan Hunt and are really quite evil.
So another like I think that we had one of our final ones is that this was just very entertaining throughout. It's got a good pace. These movies are all pretty well paced, especially once Christopher McQuarrie took over as director. Him and Tom Cruise, who also is like basically the co-director on these, mm-hmm. I think did a good job of pacing this out. This one is a little long, which we'll talk about in dislikes a little bit. But for the most part, when you compare this to, I mean, what we just did in Indiana Jones, that this did not feel as much like 2 hours and 40 minutes as Indiana Jones did.
I agree with you. I can forgive a lot about the time, and it's rare that I can do that. But again, I think it's this type of movie. It's the same with Bond. Like, if it's this exciting and this well mm-hmm. done, I don't really care how long it is. It will definitely keep me from watching it like every Saturday, like if I don't have time to watch it over and over again. But I thought the pacing was really quite good. And from the very beginning to the end, I was really interested. I can't easily think of what I would cut. I do think it could have been edited, but I can't easily figure out where I would trim the fat.
Yeah, and like you mentioned James Bond, like No Time to Die, I just mm-hmm. looked, as 2 hours and 42 minutes.
Yeah.
But again, it moves at a great pace, so it doesn't feel that, I mean, you feel it in some parts, but it doesn't feel like a slog when you're watching
right.
it. So,
right.
Do you have any other likes before we move into dislikes?
Oh, well, I just thought okay. the camera work was quite beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I like exactly what you said. The candle scene, that really stood out to me. I really liked, I've seen this done in other movies, and I don't even know how to describe it. But when they're in the train car, because I think this happened in something like Inception, like that they've done some tricks like this. There was a moment where they're kind of like flying
like
through
zero
the air
gravity.
And
yeah.
down. Yeah. And that was really cool. And it was unexpected. And I didn't feel like it was a cheesy thing to do. And really just, I think part of it was some of the movies we've seen lately, the camera work and the special effects are so bad that this one stood out to me as really, really well done. I know like Spider-Verse, when we did that, that was excellent. Like everything they do with the cameras and all that stuff is impressive. But I just think we've seen a lot of action things this year so far that have been very poorly done as far as like shoddy camera work and really bad special effects. And I think this was completely the opposite and they did a really good job.
Yeah. At certain points they have like GoPros on the motorcycles or the cars. That's a really cool, like kind of close up camera angle. And then when Tom Cruise does his big stunt, obviously of like jumping the motorcycle and parachuting, they film that in a way that lets you know that, hey, he's actually doing this. Like this is not CGI. Like, you know, they do a very wide shot of it. They film him from behind. Like you can tell that he's actually like doing it. So I think if you, depending on how you film that, it could look like it was CGI'd, but the way they filmed that sequence made you think, oh, okay, this is like, he's really doing this. Like this is an actual stunt that he's performing. So, and he's obviously crazy for doing those, but you know, we'll talk about him a little bit in dislikes as well. So on to dislikes now. I think my main dislike with this one was just the villain. So like the villain is AI basically, and AI is like taking over and, you know, getting into all these computer systems and affecting all this stuff. But I think with the AI and then like also with like the people that want to, there's a key and lots of people want to buy the key or have the key because that like lets you control the AI, but you don't know how to control it. I just thought it was a little clunky in the villain part of it. It seemed like there were like three villains in this movie at times, and I just don't know if over the course of this long of a movie, if that the AI villain, while interesting, I just didn't think had as much depth as maybe some other villains in other movies in this franchise. I mean, this is only part one, so I can't really fully judge it until we see part two and how they finish the story. But I think in part one, it was a little lacking for me in the villain area.
Okay, I think that's fair. You're not the only person I have read or heard a review of that said that. I wasn't bothered. In fact, I thought it was quite timely because I had just listened to the New York Times podcast, The Daily, talk about the AI stuff with the writer's strike. And I thought, oh, wow, how crazy that they did this movie mm-hmm. where like AI's a villain and right now this is which they couldn't have predicted. This is how everything would go down. That didn't bother me. But I do think that's a fair point to make.
Another dislike is that this was a little long. I mean, it's a little lengthy considering there will be a part two, and it just seems like we're kind of building towards that part two. Also, I think this one was much more of an ensemble movie, and just knowing how Tom Cruise is, I feel like part two is going to be way more Tom Cruise. Like he's going to be like centrally involved, and I just feel like that's how part two is going to play out. I don't know, maybe not. But like in the third act of this movie, he's not really in the third act of this movie very much, only for, you know, a couple minutes until he actually makes it onto the train. And then it kind of, you know, he's back in it. But there's a period there where he's not in it for a while. And I think, too, like you said, with the length and everything, there's probably a little bit you could edit down. I mean, if this was like 2 hours and 15 or 2 hours and 20 minutes, that might be a little bit better.
Yeah, my problem was mainly it was long. I really wasn't bothered by that until the end, because I felt like the end kind of ended maybe in a weird place mm-hmm. or like I thought something crazy was going to happen and then it was going to end. So I would say my problem was more with how they ended this part one than anything else. And it wasn't like I was bored. There was at no point in the film was I bored, but I just thought by the end I was like, wow, that was kind of a disappointing end to part one. So that was probably my biggest dislike.
Yeah, whereas like Spider-Verse, when they end part one, they really ended at a good spot where you're like,
oh yeah,
this is going to be like a lot for Miles and this is a really bad situation for him and I can't wait to see how this plays out, like leaves you on the edge of your seat basically.
Right.
And this one, you like you said, does kind of end with a little bit more of a whimper, if you will.
Yeah.
Like Ethan has the key, he's gonna go take the key to wherever he needs to go, and that's kind of where the movie ends. But if it had ended while they were like on that train or like in the another middle of an action sequence or something, that might have been a little bit cooler. So another dislike for me is that the sequence on the train I felt was a little unbelievable when all the cars started like falling down. I was like, why don't you all just like the next one, just get off the train. I know the bridge is like kind of jacked up, but like you could probably still walk along there and then you wouldn't have to like climb up five train cars or whatever. So
fair. That's
and I thought
fair.
The speed at which they were falling was also like, it's like, that was very, very slow. they would get to the next one and then it would start falling down again. So I did like how they stopped the train and how they told everybody to go to the back of the train. You know,
yeah.
that was good script writing there. But I just felt like them, that sequence of them climbing up the train for however long that was, while cool at times, I was also like, come on, they probably would have just jumped off at this point. So, or ran really fast to the end of it or something.
I think this is another example, unfortunately, of like me comparing it to other films as of late. Marvel films, Fast and the Furious films, all these big franchises that are just stupid. Like so many stupid things happen that I'm just like, this just would never happen, that made me go like, this doesn't bother me. Or, oh, I expect this from this kind of film. I would agree with you. I mean, like, there's just no way they would have survived half the stuff in this film. But I thought it was very creative how they would get from car to car. I also noticed how they got everybody else to move to the front of the train car so those people were safe. So it didn't bother me quite as much. I will tell you one thing that bothered me on the train that you made me remember. So Vanessa Kirby, at some point, Grace is wearing a mask of some sort where she looks like Vanessa Kirby. She has brown eyes. Vanessa Kirby has blue eyes. This drove me insane. I'm like, you have the technology to make a face that looks so much like a real person. Like, it doesn't even look like there's makeup, prosthetics, whatever. But you miss the point where you have to wear contacts for this 20-minute conversation. Or, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I don't expect them to cover her eyes where she can't see. But you didn't think to put in context. And the fact that this guy doesn't notice that this woman has brown eyes when the other woman he was talking to before had blue, I just thought that detail just sent me over the edge. And to some people, that might not be a big deal at all. But to me, I was like, wow. Like, you guys specialize in disguises and everything else, and like this you miss. So that infuriated me. It took me out of the scene.
Yeah, I now that you mentioned that, I didn't even really notice it. So probably a guy's point of view, but but also, like, you know, I think that's a good point. And it's not like us as a viewer, we weren't confused as to which one was Hayley Atwell and which one was
not
Vanessa Kirby. Like, it's very obvious from a script and storytelling standpoint, like, who was where. So it wasn't like we needed that distinguishing factor to know, oh, this is actually Hayley Atwell. But yeah, now that you mentioned that, it's kind of odd that they did, like, totally overlook that and didn't change that at all. So,
and I think maybe I noticed too, because Vanessa Kirby, it could have been too, she was wearing all white. I mean, that was another thing. It's like her outfit's completely different.
Yes.
And I thought, okay, like, I don't think this guy is the smartest, like, sharpest tool in the shed, but he does work for the FBI. And the fact that, like, he doesn't notice a complete costume change and then he doesn't notice eye color differences, I'm just upset about it. And Vanessa Kirby, too, I think also her first outfit might have been what stood out to me, is she's wearing all white and then she has striking blue eyes. She doesn't have, like my eyes are like a gray blue. Whatever. She has like piercing blue eyes. And I just thought it was so weird that like nobody caught that. And that's such a small detail that they could have fixed that I couldn't believe it.
Understandable. So, and then final dislike is Tom Cruise as an actor is cool. Tom Cruise as a person, like his personal life, he's, got some things going on. Obviously, big Scientology guy. Loves
gives
movies.
Me the ick is what I put.
Yeah. Posted on Instagram that he was going to see, this is before the strike, but was going to see Barbie and Oppenheimer and was super excited. So he's a big movie theater guy, loves the movies, but like some of the other stuff in his life is a little wild. So,
well, and people say he's so nice, like especially while promoting this film, everybody's like, one of the nicest guys in Hollywood. I don't believe that. But also, he might be a nice guy to like people when it serves him, but like his Scientology stuff is like dangerous. Like, peddling that crap is dangerous to do. And also, like, he has little to no involvement with any of his children, no matter how, if he adopted them, if they are biologically his. So I just, I like, he just really bothers me. And really, none of his exes have nice things to say about him either. You never hear Nicole Kidman or Katie Holmes say like, well, he has this good quality. They just don't say anything. And that's very telling to me. And he just creeps me out. So I am not a Tom Cruise fan by any imagination, stretch of the imagination. And I also think I think he's really good with knowing what movies fit him and what he can do very well in. And that's a skill. But as an actor, just as like an actor with acting chops, I don't think his are exceptional.
Yeah, I would like, since he's done so many action movies recently, I would like for him to do like maybe once Mission Impossible's over, another dramatic role, you know, like a Jerry Maguire or like A Few Good Men or something like that, just to see if he still has it like he did back in the day. I think he's just done so many action movies recently, we just associate him with being the action movie guy. So if he were to like get into a drama, I think that could be really, really kind of interesting. I mean, you look at somebody too, like Brad Pitt did Bullet Train, straight action movie, but then before that did Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is way more of a drama. So, I mean, you know, when you look at some of these action movie stars, some of them are extending their range a little bit more than Tom Cruise does. So,
yeah.
Okay, time now for scores. Who's going first this episode?
It's me.
Okay, what are you going to give Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1?
All right, I'm giving it a very high score. I'm giving it a 96.
Wow, okay.
It's one of my favorite movies I've seen this year. I can't help myself. I really debated because Air is neck and neck right now with it. I think just as far as a movie that I'm interested in the material, the locations, the everything, this would slightly be better because I really like spy movies. I really like action. I really like pretty people in pretty places. That sounds like I'm dumb. I don't want to sound that way. I'm just saying like this definitely fits the like what appeals to me. Now, do I think Oppenheimer is going to blow this out of the water? Yes. Yes, I do. I mean, I absolutely do. But I just thought this was so enjoyable. It was really entertaining. And I had so few dislikes. Like, I can't dock at points for Tom Cruise being disgusting. Really, to me, it was like two things that bothered me about the film. Otherwise, I thought it was really good. And it's another one of those movies that gives you exactly what you want and what you expect. But it did it all very well. Like, its delivery was great.
I'm going to go a little bit lower than you, but still pretty high. I'm going to go 86 out of 100. I didn't like it as much as Mission Impossible Fallout. I think that's my favorite Mission Impossible movie. The villain was a little clunky in this one to me. And then also, with this just being a part one, I don't really know how they're going to wrap up this story. So, you know, I might change my score a little bit once part two comes out.
I mean, I might too.
You know, and if part two is great or if part two is not great, you know, that could have an effect on this movie. But for right now, still a very solid movie. You should definitely go see it in theaters. We both enjoyed it. So that is our thoughts on Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part one. And you can follow the show on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram. Search the Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook and find us there. Find our letterbox profiles in the show description so you can see what else we are watching that may not be podcast related. Or if you want to go and figure out how many stars we gave a movie for like a past episode or whatever, that's a good place to go to see what our scores are. And then up next, we got a big week coming up. We got Barbie and Oppenheimer. We're going to do Barbie first, because I think that's the natural way to go see these, is see Barbie and then see Oppenheimer. So start on a high note and then go down and,
go,
you know, you're
dark. Yeah.
Think about Oppenheimer for 5 hours after you watch it. But Barbie, of course, directed by Greta Gerwig, starring Margot Robbie, Ryan Gosling. Should be great. Both movies are getting great reviews, early reviews so far. So we're going to start with Barbie, but we'll have Barbie and Oppenheimer for you next week here on the show.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.